Summit.
All right, let's start.
What's
that? Welcome, everyone. It's always great to see you. Sometimes difficult for the 5:30, but we're doing our best. So we have the RDA meeting right now, and it looks like we have four of the five directors for the RDA here. So let's move ahead. We have one business item. We have the Legacy Crossing Theater LLC request to amend agreement, and we are going to be looking and hearing from a gentleman from Legacy Theater. Do we need any introduction at all?
Nate will come up and introduce
us. Give us an introduction, and then let's get right into it.
Good evening. I'll just give you a quick background of this before we let you hear from Mr. Bridenstine. So the RDA entered into this agreement with Legacy Crossing Theater LLC back in September 2010. Per this agreement, the Megaplex Theater needs to have a minimum of 500,000 theater tickets sold to be eligible to receive the tax increment. The theater has sold that many tickets up until 2020, and they did not make it in 2020, 2021, or this past year, 2022. So in 2020, the theater was ordered to be closed due to the pandemic, and was not able to meet their sales. The RDA approved an amendment to the agreement that allowed Legacy Crossing to receive the tax increment. In 2021, again, the theater was closed for a portion of the year, and they didn't meet their ticket sales. But again, they came to the RDA, and an amendment was approved to allow them to receive the tax increment. And this year, they did not meet their ticket sales. As you can see attached is a letter from Blake Anderson, the president of Megaplex Theaters. And in that, he has a chart showing his ticket sales. So they had 421,639 in 2022. So as per the contract, they did not meet their ticket sales number. So currently they're not eligible to receive that tax increment, which is why Mr. Bridenstine is here today. So unless there's any questions from me, I will pass it back.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Thanks for that overview. Mm-hmm. All right, come on up.
Yep.
Just introduce yourself and where you're from for the record, okay? Even though Nate just talked to you.
Dan Bridenstine with U.S. Development. My offices are in Layton and my home as well. Almost feel like a resident of Centerville. The journey that we started about 10 or 12 years ago, it's good to see Lisa again. She was here when we first negotiated this agreement under the CDA. I don't know if you remember this, but we... the tax base on what they called affectionately the goat pasture over there was $135 a year. So I think we've done a pretty good job at increasing tax base with what we've built in the Legacy Crossing complex. The CDA area, for those of you that may be new or unfamiliar with it, encompassed the area, all of the Legacy Crossing area. So it was the 200-unit apartment complex, which we built, the JF Capital building and the one next to it, Gary Wright's building, the where CW Wright is out at the front, essentially all those offices as well as the theater complex. Part of the intent, I really kind of hate to start out on the negative thing that we missed the ticket sales, and I'll discuss that a little bit, but the real intent there was to create a great community venue, and part of the presentation that we made with this CDA, the City Council, and the CDA board when we did the original analysis was that this would be a community asset. And part of that agreement is that Blake Anderson, Megaplex Theaters Group, they have the all of the schools in the school district have an opportunity to come and utilize the facility to see whether it's a National Geographic film or a rerun of a cool football film, you know, remember the Titans or something, then there's opportunities that, which are used frequently from the school district to utilize that facility. And I think that we, as partners there with the city and with Megaplex Theaters, I think we've been a great partner in the community to fulfill the mission that we had there for the public. You know, movie theaters are a great place for people to gather and have a good time, and we just feel like it's such a great community asset. Now, the bad news. You take a look at the little graph. Did everybody have the little letter that I got from Blake? So I called Blake, in essence, and said, well, I got to go before the CDA board, and we're under the goal of the 500,000 ticket sales. And I just asked him to show a history because I wanted to look historically at what happened. Well, you can see in 2012, in 13 it increased, 14 it went down a little, and then 15, 16, 17, up until 2020, and we all know what happened then. The industry, it's amazing that their doors are still open, and it's only because it's the Larry H. Miller Group that's our tenant that we would even be having any discussion, because that could have easily gone dark like a lot of theaters did across the country. But you would think, okay, well, COVID got over in a year or two. You know, why didn't they just immediately jump back to where they were? Well, the theater industry, it wasn't just the ticket sales at the theater that got shut down. Hollywood production got shut down. They were not producing film during that whole COVID period, or very moderate amounts of film. In fact, the only redeeming point why we've bounced back this last year, which I read an article in the it was the Wall Street Journal, I think, that talked about Top Gun Maverick coming out and getting people back out to the theaters again. And they actually, in this article, said Top Gun Maverick saved the movie industry, you know. So at any rate, it was very intriguing to me that one film could get people back in the theaters. So after I'd heard that article, I talked to Blake, and he said absolutely that was the case. Well, guess what? Top Gun Maverick and the other big one last year was Avatar. Both of those were produced prior to 2020. It's hard to believe that they were produced that far. So they were pre-COVID productions. In fact, Avatar is nearly finished already back then on the next two series. So the only reason that we had any kind of a year last year at all was the fact that Hollywood had produced those two movies prior to COVID. Well, Blake said to me the other day as we were having this conversation that they're looking at some good film releases this summer. They anticipate a stronger market coming back. And so they're optimistic that they're going to see the advances in the future in terms of gross ticket numbers. But the other interesting thing, if you read the second to last line or bottom paragraph, the gross revenue in 2012, the first year we were open, with 548,000 tickets sold, the Megaplex Theater's gross revenue was $6.6 million that year. Last year, in 2022, it was $6.8 million. So even though the ticket sales were down, you know, by, you know, whatever the math is there, a moderate amount, their gross revenue is up, and that's due to two business models that they've improved that really enhance gross sales volume, sales tax, jobs at the theater, everything that we wanted to achieve with the CDA. And that is, they put in the luxury seating in a certain percentage of the theaters, which was an enhanced ticket price, and people love them, by the way. And then their food services expanded. You know, they brought Pizza Hut in, and they've done other things with their food services. The other thing that I want to point out is that I don't know how many tickets, but all of the free tickets that you had analyzed to all the kids in the school district that have been there. So there have been bodies in seats far in excess of the number that we showed in terms of the actual ticket sales. So we've delivered on every other aspect of our responsibility. We piped, part of the financial component for the CDA was we had to pipe under the highway to bring a water main in that essentially developed water for that whole west part of the city. And so that infrastructure, along with some other road infrastructure and other components, was part of what we built, that we had to advance the capital as a developer group in order to build the theater complex and the associated businesses around it that are part of the CDA. Last year, we also made a considerable investment out of our CDA proceeds that we got. We, along with the other owners in that complex, completely ripped out that road that comes in with the roundabout in front of the theater there. It had gotten riddled through the years due to freeze-thaw cycles, and so we did an industrial strength complete redevelopment of that road. It was a very expensive item, but again, trying to improve and enhance and protect the asset there. Last comment I'll make is Blake Anderson indicated to me, I asked him the question, hey, we got 5 years left on our lease. How are we doing? You know, do I need to start thinking about getting into the movie business myself? And he indicated that they're very happy with Centerville City. It's a good business environment here. They enjoy being partners with you in the city. And they anticipate once another COVID hits, I don't know, unless something radically changes in the movie industry, that they're here. And that the theater industry is really the name and face of the Larry H. Miller Group now. Now that they've sold the Jazz and sold the dealerships, this is kind of their venue for being a part of the community. And, I mean, there are a few people in Utah that have made as many contributions financially to the state as the Miller family has. So we're certainly excited to have them as a flag here with us, and feel that we've earned, all by every reason but one little detail, this 500,000 ticket count. We felt we've earned certainly the CDA amount that we're getting. And I guarantee the school district's cashing in on a lot more than they did when it was a goat pasture, in addition to the kids being able to utilize facilities. So my wife says I always get too long-winded, so I'm sorry for that. But I certainly answer any questions you have.
Thanks, Dan. There's a bunch of them. Councilman Summerhays has raised his hand at me.
Yeah, so Dan, I've got a few questions. Do you know what was the total number of seats the theaters had when the agreement was entered into in 2010?
You know, I don't know the number that they took out. Usually there's two rows of conventional seats that they turn into one row of the luxury seats. The theater in Layton, the AMC theater, they went through and did 100% of their theater is all luxury seating now.
And I guess that leads to the question is, are ticket sales now the wrong metric for this CDA? I'm happy to discuss that, but if there's fewer seats available, that means fewer tickets, though those seats are priced higher. So is it now a discussion, should the increment be based off of a revenue rather than a ticket model?
That was an analysis that the Millers made, and that's the reason they chose to do just a percentage of their seating in the luxury seating as opposed to gutting the whole thing and doing everything like AMC did in Layton. Because on the big events, when, you know, the weekend, for example, that Top Gun Maverick came out, they filled every theater. And during that week, you know, that weekend, the opening weekend, they might have had a few people that had to go to the 10 o'clock show instead of the 7 o'clock show because they've sold out the theaters. You got to understand that IMAX has 600 seats in it. So it's a big theater. And the one next to it, number 7, is 600 seats as well. So they've so rarely, maybe twice a year, that they would sell out the whole theater. And so their objective is we can make a higher premium. Our gross dollar volume, as is evidenced by the dollars, the sales they did, we make more money by having those premium seats available than we would if we had 99.9% of the time they would be sitting empty, those other additional seats. So I hope I've answered that correctly.
Yeah, what you're saying, there's a float already embedded in their total seat count.
Say again, I'm sorry.
I'm just saying that there's what would be termed as a float in other real estate terms. If you have additional capacity, that is being unutilized, I think is what you're
doing. Yeah, it's so minute compared to the enhanced value. Every weekend they sell out. If a film's at all good, they always fill all of the luxury seating. So it's amazing that if you had luxury seating in a theater that had 40 luxury seats and there were 80 people in the theater, the 40 seats would have been filled. So, and then the other 40 would have been the conventional seating. So in terms of business model, they're very happy with what they've done. In fact, new builds that they do going forward, that's the way they'll build them right out of the ground. So
I think the other three are more generally comments more than they are questions, and it's for the council to think about. Maybe the council's already thinking about these, but as an anecdotal piece of evidence, my wife was a pre-COVID, our kids are older in school, so she'd sneak away Tuesday afternoons to do the Tuesday $5 show. And the anecdotal piece of information that I would pass along is she was an avid theater goer. I was, and the reason why I was more or less that way was because of general theater etiquette. I would go to the theater and I'd spend a lot of money and I was either interrupted or getting seats kicked or people talking during a film, and so I was already disenamored with it. And my wife now feels the same way. So that's just an anecdotal piece of information that you can't control, but maybe the Miller Group can do a better job of helping patrons have a good experience in their theaters through just general courtesy and etiquette. I will also say that theaters, I feel like from a CDA perspective, where we're in this partnership, we're a little bit caught in this content war. Now we have a lot of focus on Netflix and Disney Plus and Amazon Prime and Apple TV Plus and Peacock and Paramount and Hulu. So are we putting ourselves in a position where we're subsidizing business competition a little bit.
So if you have all those services, that's why you can't go to the movies. Paying too much.
I've just reeled off the ones I searched, but I don't know if we have all those, but we maybe very well could. Yeah. But and then my last point is maybe it changes now because post-production was hampered by COVID, and again, that's in it. But as I look at upcoming films for 2023 personally, I think this is just another commentary as a viewer. It's a lot of remakes, prequels, sequels, etc., and there's not a lot of great original content. So
there is some of that. I would like, if I could, and excuse me for taking the time, Mayor, but I think there's an interesting point that's very intriguing. Blake just got back 2 weeks ago from, it's called Show West, it's in Las Vegas, and it's where all of the movie purveyors in the whole western half of the United States, really the East Coast, they come with their new software on how to do ticket sales, new popcorn makers, the film companies are there selling, they're doing previews, they'll have a lot of their red carpet previews at that event, trying to sell the theater purveyors that, hey, we want you to show our film. And here was what one of the major keynote speakers indicated that was very intriguing. Amazon is now into film production. Netflix, you named all of them, Councilman. All of the film companies, Hulu, and most of those film companies have realized they made a huge mistake when they thought they could skin the movie theater industry, the purveyors, and do this stuff on streaming. Their business model in the production world is changing. They're saying, no, it was stupid for us to do it all on the monthly streaming activities. People are gonna still watch the hundreds and hundreds of choices we have on streaming, thousands of choices. But now the newer model is they will be releasing their film that they produce, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Hulu, Paramount, their first releases are going to be back in the big house, is what we call it. So if anything, the industry is, the dynamic, it went backwards and now it's going full speed ahead where we will see more film. Now, as far as what's written, the content, I'm with you. You know, why can't we have less R-rated film and more PG?
I didn't say that. I mean,
I'll say it for you. Yeah, it makes me sick every time I look at it. But it's industry-wide. It's not just in Centerville. But the point is, you're going to be seeing more and more film available that will be featured at the theaters first before it's available on streaming. So most of us like to have a date on Friday night and get out of the house. So that's...
Well, as a primary concern, you know, when this was entered into, the streaming market was different. TV entertainment options as far as the technology were different. It is, you can get a blow-up screen and a great projector for under $500, and if you're willing to wait 2 weeks, you can pay $24 to buy the movie and you and your neighborhood can watch it. And I'm not going to talk about licensing or any of that.
Right.
But there are a lot of people, as TV sizes get larger, and they're willing to forego, you know, spending $60 to go to the movies for three people and watch it at home. And so I'm worried that in this new hybrid model, and I know that some of the studios have stopped the same day release. They've decided that that was a COVID thing and they're not willing to do that. Other studios are leaning into it heavier that, you know, if you're willing to pay a bit of a premium, you can watch it at home on the same day. So what is the incentive for the person who's, you know, bought a $1,200 86-inch TV that gives them pretty much the same experience at home to go to the theater? I'm more concerned these numbers are never going to climb back up because that competition is real. And, you know, at the price point, the entertainment options, if you're willing to wait a little bit, you know, there's always going to be the first run people, but if you're willing to wait a bit, you get a bigger bang for your buck staying at home.
I can only share what Blake indicated from the movie purveyors nationally, that their trend is going to be to release it. Now, there have always been those that waited for it to come out on 8-track, then CD, now streaming, or then Redbox, now streaming. So every time one of those events would happen, everybody would say, oh, there goes the theater, you know, the movie house, the thing of the past. And yet what happened when they first came out with 8-tracks is all of a sudden, because Hollywood had another venue to sell their product at besides this movie theater, it enhanced their ability to make bigger investments to produce film. So now that's enhanced further. We don't buy them on an 8-track anymore, or CD even rarely. It's now through streaming, but it's the same thing. There is so much more film product, and again, it's all a personal taste as to how much of that product's good, certainly, but there's so much more product that's going to be available. Why did the Larry Miller Group sell the Jazz and sell 50 automobile dealerships that were printing money and hang on to the movie theater industry? I think somebody has done some homework. So anyway, I've...
Director Hurst, go ahead.
I was just going to say, George, you mentioned that the numbers had dropped and they may not come back. I a little bit disagree with that because I think the numbers here do show... I'm actually surprised that in 2021 you got more than halfway to the 500,000 required ticket sales. In 2022, you're only 80,000 off. I guess I'd rather see us give them one more year to, let's just see what happens. I agree, maybe movie going has changed. I think that, you know, we still like to go to the theater, even if it is a little noisier. It's our big TV does not put out the sound or the realistic feeling of the movie theater, so I think we're always going to pick to go. I would rather see this business get back on track and give them another year than make the assumption that it's just all is lost and maybe it's not coming back.
No, I'm not trying to head there. I'm reacting to what Spencer said relative to, is this the right metric anymore? And I'm wondering if it is. I'm not sure it's going to be.
Yeah, I agree with that comment that Spencer made, that maybe it shouldn't be based on ticket sales, maybe it should be based on revenue. But at this point, I mean, we have an agreement in place. Can we give them one more year to see if it can get back?
So, Lisa, you were here when this was put in place. Can you give us a little history and maybe your opinion on, you know, how we're going to go on this? I mean, I feel like it was put there for a reason, and if they weren't going to hit this, we weren't going to, you know. So So we knew the prices were going to go up. When, I mean, obviously, we know when we give something for rent, you know in 5 years rent's going to be more than it is now. But we didn't choose to go that way. We chose to go for the tickets. I'd kind of like to know if you know why we chose that. And
yeah, I don't recall why we chose that specific benchmark, but it is important in the tax increment realm to make sure that we're getting, a successful project. And right. That was one idea. I think it was Louis Young that actually drafted that tax increment agreement. And, you know, so it is interesting because we're looking at sales tax, but tax increment is really about property tax. But I think the purpose is, again, just to make sure that we're getting, you know, a successful project. And I think that's why Mr. Bridenstine brought up a lot of the other aspects, which is where the money went to, which was infrastructure and the roads and developing an area. And they did get a large percentage of the tax increment that was coming in, but they were the first in. You know, so some of the other tax increment agreements that we've entered into with other property owners in other projects, you know, the first one in is really taking most of the risk. So
we have had complaints from others that came in later.
Exactly. But that
about the amount that these guys got compared to the amount that they got. And
generally you incentivize the anchor store more than you incentivize others. Others will
so
follow.
So I do
the
know that
store.
We have had people come before us.
Yeah.
I'm kind of with Gina. I'm still a little sympathetic this year, but I'm not ready to change things. I want to see where we go for another year. And
so if I can just add two items, if I can speculate on the $500,000, I would speculate that benchmark was made because we're more concerned about, use a different term, more people in the seats, actually, and then spending money in our community, right? So if you have 500,000 tickets sold, they're spending money in and out in Chick-fil-A, so you're creating that benchmark. So revenue going above and beyond for Larry H. Miller Group is one thing, but it's not necessarily driving in more people into our community to spend money. So there's a direct sales tax benefit for the added revenue they're collecting, but we're really concerned more about the indirect revenue. That's me speculating why that number was created and why that.
And does this CDA expire at some point?
It will. I don't know how much longer the CDA has.
Yes, I think it's a 14-year.
And then this.
Yeah, I think it runs out in 14 years.
14-year from when it's.
So we don't have that many more years to go. And
yeah, and then second, again,
not from the inception date, probably from a
when
first,
the trigger point.
When it was triggered.
Yeah, probably when opening a business or something like that.
So the second thing is I had, when we were having this conversation, I asked both Nate, again, the metric of $500,000, what's a sales tax related to an infrastructure, it doesn't make any sense to me why we'd pick that. But I can understand why that would be a metric used in terms of economic development. But they did put in the infrastructure, which now has grown. You have apartments that attach to that infrastructure. You have potentially some more growth going on. So I don't necessarily want to punish the developer for something that's outside of his control, and that's the Megaplex Theater.
Right.
And so I don't necessarily want to punish him because the infrastructure was installed at a pretty costly expense. And so that's where I'm saying I'm okay leaving it at the $500,000 this year, but the recommendation, you didn't see anything in the packet because I didn't necessarily have a recommendation till now, and that's after looking into the film industry over the weekend and reading articles about how the production has stalled. And you even look at it today, I watched a show and they were still wearing masks, and this is still post-COVID, and you have half the staff wearing masks because California, just be frank, would shut down everything, right? And I don't necessarily want, again, this is outside of his control, and I think we give it one more year. Let's see where the ticket sales are, but during the year, maybe we reevaluate the metric used, or with so many years left that we just say, look, we don't necessarily have this metric as a metric anymore. We reduce it to 400,000, which they met this year. I don't know. We can look at it, but
I was going to say, I want
to get food for thought for the directors to think, okay, is this the right approach? If we're looking at amendments, we should be thinking about what is the right amendment into the future.
So that's
and maybe next year they'll
staff.
Come back. There won't be a problem. Yes. Maybe they'll
correct.
Hit their
yeah.
their things. So I don't want them to lose their incentive to try to hit that mark.
And they're
and
good
I don't
neighbor.
Want to give them the feeling that, oh, if you come back again next year and you haven't hit that mark, we're an easy mark, so it's all right. We'll give you whatever. I want them to work their very hardest to get to that $500,000. You know, if it's maybe having two $5 Tuesdays. So our residents have a little more. I mean, the movies is expensive. It's hard if you've got four or five kids to take them to the movies. So If they've got to fill those seats, maybe we're giving them an incentive to offer our citizens a little bit better deal on their seats. So I'm okay with it this time, but I'd like to leave it as is and hope that we're giving them the incentive to fill those seats.
So are one of your directors ready to do a motion on the amendment? Or Lisa, do you want to give us a feel of what we're looking to
just
do?
Just a comment. So this was a discussion to see if the RDA is in favor of this. And if so, we just request that you direct staff to prepare amendment number 3 to extend this waiver one more year. We'll just use the similar language that we did for 2020 and 2021. And we'll bring that back to you.
We did. Okay, thank you.
Okay, good. So moved.
Yep.
Is Yep a second? Sorry.
Oh, yes.
I didn't want to.
Yep is the official second.
I don't like Yep.
I wanted to see if that was a second, Brian.
Yes.
Okay.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I heard all ayes. Okay, we're good.
Thank you. We'll continue to try to be a good partner in the city. Ironically, too, we received a call from a group that's doing a study for the city. What could we do better as a city for you businesses? So I threw it out to Blake Anderson and said, what could the city do for us now? I said, approve this RDA amendment was my vote, but he said, just tell them all to buy more movie tickets. So please come out to the movie. And if you have any kids, grandkids, friends in schools in Davis County District, tell them that venue's there, they ought to be using it, because we love to host activities there. So,
thanks.
Mayor, thank you for your time.
We've had our city party there, too. I need to look approval on the minutes.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor, aye.
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 Adjournment.
Motion to adjourn. Second.
All right, all in favor, aye.
Okay.
Let's move down to...